let me know when. I assume it's just.
Just press this video. Down and get the red. Look for the red light in the thing. Press
okay,
down.
The rose head's now cut off again.
Make it higher as long as.
There we go. That's good. Now the rope can move around a
press
bit.
Press the button now. Is the red light on?
Yeah.
Okay, good evening. We continue in our work in the Shari Tshuva. And we are on the next principle of Tsar B'maisa, the fourth principle of actively portraying your sorrow and anguish over the situation that you're in. And we said that this comes after the third principle of Yogoin. And we said that just like if a person has aziva sachet, he leaves the sin, it proves that the charata, the regret of the first step, is proper and he really meant it. So the same thing we see with this Tsar B'maisa, where the person actively portrays the anguish, it proves the yogain that he has, the sorrow that he has, is a genuine sorrow, and it comes from that. And Ben Yonah explains how this has to manifest itself, and it's primarily with the heart and the eyes, where the person sighs, and he has real, genuine heartache. And we'll see in a minute with the eyes what will be happening with the eyes. And he explained that these were the two agents of sin. The heart and the eyes were the agents of sin. So now you have to correct that by having those agents of sins now be engaged in bringing the person back and doing things that are appropriate for that. So we're in the middle of Sif Tes Vav on page 22 and 23. And we finished the point of, we're about halfway through the paragraph. He brings the idea of, well, a little more than halfway through the paragraph. We just ended off with the analogy of the utensils that are tummy, that are impure, that need to be broken. And he brings the pasuk in Vayikra that says, Tanur v'kirayim yutatz, that the various, ovens arranged should be smashed. That's where we ended off last night. So again, based on this concept that tshuva is a process of redirection. In other words, everything exists in terms of function and purpose. And we talk about someone doing something wrong. We aren't talking about destroying a person's potentials. We're talking about misdirecting their potentials. And that's exactly what the analogy of the vessel, of the utensil is. You have a utensil. The whole concept of a utensil is that it has function and purpose. And specifically, if it's a kli cheres, if it's an earthenware utensil, versus a kli zohav or kesef, versus a gold or silver utensil. A gold and silver utensil at least has value, inherent value in the gold and the silver. An earthenware utensil has no value except for its function and purpose. If it functions as a utensil, then it has a value. But without it, it has no value. So now, when it comes in contact with tumah, when it comes in contact with the ritual impurity, so it can no longer operate within the function and purpose that it has because of the impurity. So what do you do with that utensil? So you have to break it. You have to break it to the point where it is functionless. And then you recreate it into a new vessel with a new function. Right? That's exactly what tshuva is. Tshuva is where you break that, you break what you've established as the function and purpose of a certain potential and energy. And at that point, when you break with that function and purpose, then you can rebuild it, and it can now serve its old function again. But you first got to break that old function. Right? Once that, the wrong function, right? So once that old function is broken, that's when the thing becomes tor, and then you can rebuild it. It's the same idea. So it's not, just like one of Newton's principles, you know, matter is neither created or destroyed, so your potentials are not created or destroyed. They're there. They're not meant to be destroyed. They just have to be changed forms. So they get broken, and then they come back the way they should be. So the halacha is how much do you have to break the utensil that it should become pure in its breakage? The answer is when it becomes totally functionless. When that vessel no longer functions the way it can, at that point it has no more function, and then it doesn't have the impurity that was associated with that function. Now you rebuild it, it has a new function, a new direction. That's the same thing we want over here. The heart and the eyes were being used in things that they should not have been used. That doesn't mean to say get rid of your eyes. Don't get rid of your eyes. You have to find a new function for the eyes. So now you've got to, so to speak, almost destroy the old way you looked. And they have to create a new way to look. And the same thing with the heart. What the heart was beating for has to beat for other things. So how do we do this? So with the heart, he's already described it's the sighing, the kvetching, you know, that comes out of the heart. And now he's going to talk about the eyes. And the sin of the eyes gets atoned for with tears. Kemoshe Nemar, as it says in Psalms, Pal ge mayim yordu einai, my eyes, rivers of water would run down my eyes, al shelo shamru sorasecha, because they did not keep your Torah. That's what King David said. They did not keep your Torah. Lo amar, King David did not say, al shelo shamarti torasecha. He didn't say that my eyes are tearing because I didn't keep Torah. Aval amar, but he says, lo shamru, they didn't keep Torah. Kihem sibu v'achet, they were the cause of the sin. Al kein horadati pal gemoyim. Therefore, I've shed rivers of tears. So just to know that we're not doing the Gemara class now. We're doing the Shari Tshuva class. So the Gemara class is after Marv. We switched it over for this week. But you can hear the Shari Tshuva. It's also good. So we're talking about, again, Tsar B'maisa. Pain, actual physically displaying the pain. So now we're talking about tears. What's the function of tears? This is the fourth step of Tshuva. So the whole concept is really saying that there's a direct connection between the organs of the body that were involved in something and how we have to rebuild it. So if the eyes participated, they have to be cleansed. So a heart can be cleansed by its emotion. Eyes are cleansed by tears. Now, it's not just the liquid of the tears per se that affect the cleansing. You can put some Visine in your eyes and that would do the trick. But rather it means that there is ultimately a deep connection between the person's heart and eyes that can motivate the person to the point of crying. The heart is so emotional, then just like the heart coveted and got the eyes to look at things it shouldn't look at, right? Really, it's a three-step process. Chazal say, the eye sees and the heart covets. The question they ask is, it says, the eye sees and the heart covets. So why does it say, Lo surachare levavachem recheinechem? Go after your heart and after your eyes. But the pasuk says, go after your heart and after your eyes. But the rabbis say, the eyes see and the heart covets. It should say, go after your eyes and after your heart. The order is not the same. So the rabbis explain, because you know what? Your eyes don't see, don't even look, except for what the heart really wants to look for. So it's really three steps. The heart tells the eyes, listen, it's not so bad if you go to the internet and look at these things. Then the eye sees it. Then the eye gets the heart to really get pumping. So it's really three steps is really happening over here. So now you need the same thing over here as well. So you have to have really feeling bad, really feeling bad, right? The heart is broken. It feels terrible. You're sighing, you're kvetching. And then that gets the eyes to tear. You understand? And then it makes the heart even feel worse. So now you're using these, you're breaking these things and you're using them in a productive way as opposed to not using them at all, but we're cleansing them and now turning them around to use them in the right way. So it really is, this, it gets you to the point of crying. And it's that point of connection between one's heart and eyes that makes the full circuit of these middlemen. So the expression of tshuva is where the emotions of the heart reaches the point that it shows itself in the eyes in terms of tears. But again, they have to be real, genuine tears, not phony tears. Now that, if you see a person really crying over this, then you're going to realize that the yagon was sincere. And if you look in the Rosh Hashanah haftorahs, you'll notice everybody's crying. Everybody's crying. Yishmael's mother is crying. Chana is crying. Rachel is crying for her children. The Medrash says even Avram, when he was taking Yitzchak to the Akedah, he also was crying. And Medrash says, I'm debating if that's going to be one of the Rosh Hashanah drushes or not. I haven't narrowed anything down yet, so we'll see. But you see, crying is really important. And the rabbis bring down that a person should be crying on Rosh Hashanah. Should be crying as happy as the day is, but there's still what to cry because we're beginning the process of tshuva. And there has to be a certain amount of sorrow, realizing that another year has passed and a lot of potentials were wasted. And a lot of averas happened. So there's got to be some type of crying that makes its way into the Rosh Hashanah davening as well. And you see all the Torah readings. People are crying all the time. Some are crying, you know, different reasons for the crying. Is it tshuva? I mean, ultimately it's some type of tshuva. Because everybody is getting closer to Hashem in all those examples. So crying is a critical aspect. It's interesting, the Shaloh HaKadosh says a very interesting Kabbalistic thing to do. He says when a person cries over his spiritual state, those tears are very precious. So he says what you should do with those tears is you should massage them into your forehead and let them reabsorb into your body. Okay? So, you know, for whatever mystical reasons, you know, a great holy person, you know, like the Chos of Lublin, if a person would walk in to see him, he would look at his face and he would see all his averes he ever did. You know, all of us ever did. So I guess the idea, if these are really good tears, the real thing, get it back into that head, man. You know, the head is called the ponim. It's called the face. Ponim means inside. It's reflecting what's going on inside. The tzaddik can see what's going on inside. You're the biggest rusher in the world if you do averus. But now, if you really have the real tears, now, I'm sure even if you don't do it, I'm sure Hashem will accept your tshuva. But he's saying it has some kind of effect. So just to close up this concept, so we see now, so there's no concept in tshuva which says that a person should be inhibited with his emotions of tshuva. You know, like big men don't cry. Right? That's not true. Let's think about this. There's the same level of lack of inhibition that went into whatever you were doing in the Avera. You weren't inhibited when you're doing the Avera. You were all excited and you did, you know, you put everything into it. So too, in the process of returning back to Hashem, we should not be inhibited in our emotions of return. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be done publicly, but certainly a person should, if they really want to accomplish this tshuva, you're going to have this real, Sa'ar b'maisa. If it doesn't manifest itself in real action of crying and heartache and things like that, then it cannot be that giving you so much anguish. What's happened? Now, obviously, you know, like again, think of things that make people cry. People who are emotional will cry over sometimes what we would think the silliest thing, but obviously for them it's an important thing. Usually you cry over things that are important. So if tshuva is important and you made a lot of mistakes, you should be crying for that. If you're not, it's a pretty good indicator that you haven't really gotten far in the process. Yes, Yaakov, you got a question?
No, I just want to have a comment. You're talking about emotional crying. There is a study that says that the tears from the cry of emotion has more proteic value. If you study a cry from a person that cries from emotion,
really,
it's a well-based study.
Has more what in it?
Protein in the tear. It's a study. It's a medical study. It's more protein as opposed to you laugh or you just cry and stamp, right?
Tears of joy have less protein than tears of sadness.
The tears of emotion has more protein than the other tears, and it's a study. It's a well established fact.
Joy is also an emotion.
Is it emotion or sadness?
It's emotion. Emotion most likely.
As opposed to pain.
As opposed to pain. Yeah. Pain is less.
I see. So you're saying the study is saying that emotional tears have more protein than painful tears.
And tears coming from when you cut an onion, I presume.
Or onion, or laughter, or whatever. Emotional.
That's why it says to rabies, to go back.
To bring it back into your system, it says.
Exactly. But it also shows that there's something of yourself that's coming out more in these tears. There's a part of yourself.
Yes, you will start a study about that.
We'd have to see what mystical connection protein has to the human being.
Something from the flesh.
But the
flesh is coming out.
More of the person is coming out.
Yeah.
It could be the bad part. Bad part is being flushed out, so to speak. Yeah. Okay, very good. Very good. Shkaya. Yes, sir.
Just want to clarify, because my understanding is that we're trying to reverse the avera by crying, by using the eyes. But that only pertains to averas that were done with the eyes.
Right.
And you also have to use the voice to...
No, all averas.
Okay,
that's true, but it's a different point. The rabbis say that the two agents of sin, the agents, is the heart and the eyes. You may use other organs of your body, but what's the agent? Let's say you kick someone in the behind, which is not a nice thing to do, right? You have to do tshuva on that too, right? So now, what prompted you to do that? Well, your heart, your eyes saw the guy that gets you, that you don't like.
It could be a jealous eye or something.
Right? And now the heart says, I'm going to get him back.
Okay.
So before you do any avera, the heart and eyes are involved.
So it's not so much an avera of seeing things you shouldn't, but your physical eyes or an emotional heart have caused you to do a sin.
Right, you're looking. I mean, that's why, for example, blind people are putter from mitzvahs, because if you think about it, blind people will probably do less averos, I would imagine, than people with sight, because they don't have to. They don't see the things that will excite them. It's harder. Even when you look at a person you don't like, that already gets you going. Just if you know they're around, it's not the same thing. That's why they don't have the same challenges of overcoming the Yetzer Hara as deeply as other people who could see. You see somebody you don't like and they're getting honored and this and that. People say the mere sight of you makes me sick. It's all that you have there. So
sick of the sight.
So of course he will discuss later on, other things in the place where you did the avera, that's the place where you have to do the tshuva. So that would maybe focus more on the specific organs of the body. But these are the organs that clearly are the, as we said, the agents. So those agents, that really is what gets you going. So now we've got to deal that whole issue. We've got to deal with that and clear that up.
Can I ask one more?
Yes, sir.
Does he mean this for all averas? Like, what about an avera if someone accidentally ate dairy sooner than they should have? Just an oversight, the kind of thing of, I'm not going to do that again.
It's not your heart or your eyes.
Because obviously that was from the eyes as well that caused it to happen, but maybe it's not as severe as something else.
Listen, even shogeg, if you do things unintentional, it kind of shows that you're not in the right place, right? You're not thinking, it could be a lack of the heart and eyes in the right place. Right? Okay, but that's not, the real tshuva is mostly, for mezid. I mean, you have to do tshuva on shogegs, but halavai, we only have to worry our shogegs would be very well off. Only the unintentional ones. It's the intentional ones, right? And obviously, I mean, clearly the pasuk saying, don't go after your heart and eyes, that has to be only talking about intentional things.
Right.
Right? So therefore, you know, shogeg has much less severity to it. I mean, it still has to be a tshuva process. No question it's a tshuva process. But that's a whole different aspect that, you know, you're just not considering your avodas Hashem that important. You're not thinking. So that would, you know, would require different things more so. Okay, let's move on to the next one. The fifth principle, Sif Tezayin, Ho'ikar HaChamishi, the fifth step, the fifth principle of tshuva is Hade'agah. So again, another Hebrew word that seems pretty similar to other words we've had. De'agah is worry. What's yagon? Worry. So we're going to have to understand what the difference is between yagon and de'agah, which is the new one over. So we really got three sad feelings here. We had charata, regret, yagon, anguish, whatever, all the English words aren't going to help, and de'agah is worry. The word worry, we'll see, probably in English, calling yagon anguish, and de'agah worry, which we'll explain, might show some differences over here. So what's he going to worry about? So Rabbeinu is going to bring us three things that the person should worry about. Three things. Number one, ki yidag v'yivchad me'onesh avonosav. He should be worried and afraid from the punishment for his sins. Ki yesh avonos she'atshuva toila, that tshuva suspends kaparasim, their atonement. The Asurim Memarkim, and suffering cleanses. There's different levels of Averis. If you just don't do a mitzvah saseh, if you didn't do a positive mitzvah, generally we say do tshuva and that's okay. Then if you do a tshuva, then if you do an Avera that is a lav, is a negative, then we have a little bit more. You have to do tshuva, and then you need Yom Kippur to help you for that. And if you do an Avera, that's a negative one, that has a more severe punishment like Kores or a Mises Bezdin, if there would be warnings, you would have been killed. Or if there's no warning, you get Kores. Right? Let's say you intentionally were Mechalel Shabbos. Intent, but there were no witnesses there. So then it's the Tshuva, Yom Kippur, and then you need suffering. If that's suffering to this aspect. And then there's certain averos, chil Hashem, that all three aren't enough, and it has to be followed with death. So you see, so there's a great concern that, you know, and many averos will require suffering, and we'll explain all that in a minute. So you should be quite concerned. He has to be worried that even though he's doing tshuva, there's still going to be punishments coming. Kamo shenemar, as it says in Tehillim, ki avoni agid, because I relate my sin, King David said, I relate them, I've confessed them, I've done tshuva for it, I've declared my avera, but ed ad mechatasi, but I'm still worried about my sin. So why are you worried about your sin if you already declared it, if you've already done tshuva for it? So what are you worried about? So that's what he's saying. You're worried about you're still going to get it. Okay. So again, we're talking about where a person has done a lot to harm himself. You know, there's an idea of tshuva. It's not an idea of Hashem getting you back and just letting out his frustrations on you. Okay, you did the tshuva, but I'm still going to punish you. That's not what we're talking about over here. As we've given the analogy before, if, you know, the doctor tells you don't eat poison and you eat poison, it's not a question of the doctor punishing you now, right? You've eaten the poison. So the worry is, you know, what remaining effect will what I've done have on my life afterwards? That's the concern, you know. So, and again, we've always been learning the harsher statements of Rabbeinu on two levels, right? What was in his time what he meant and what the generation could absorb and what it means for us. So the same thing over here. So, the level that the author wrote it on 800 years ago was a very strong message. A person can do tshuva and suffer miserably for the rest of his life. Possibly. Right? That's all not to negate his tshuva. And not to say his tshuva wasn't an important thing, but because it's a necessary process for the cleansing of the person, it has to happen. Now, people, you know, you shouldn't make a mistake. You shouldn't make a mistake when a person does tshuva, and then all of a sudden he's suffering. Then the person thinks his tshuva wasn't good. Could be, but not necessarily. If you're following the equation, there, you know, if you know what avera you did, and the avera requires suffering for it to, after the tshuva, so then you shouldn't be upset, because that's exactly the way the prescription is being followed. And then you should really be happy. Why? Knowing that the poison is running its course and that you will eventually be cleaned from it. Now, we'll talk more about that. It's not a happy thing to look forward to. And that's where the da'aga is. You have to be concerned that, you know what, things aren't over. It's not like, oh, I've done my tshuva, everything's fine, I cried, I rubbed the tears into my forehead like they told me to, I really felt terrible, you know, and then what happens? Now that I've become a Baal Tshuva, things are 10 times worse in my life. Right? But he's saying that's what you should expect. If what you did, averas that require that, so that's what's going to happen. Right? That's what he says. Rabbeinu Yonah later on in the fourth gate, he goes through all these things. If a person transgresses, averas that have kares and besin would kill you, a tshuva, you still need suffering. Still need suffering. So we'll talk about what one can do maybe to avoid that suffering. But that's part of the process. The avera is so, when you do an avera on a mystical level, you're causing tremendous destruction. You know, if you can understand why this year, the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we're not going to blow the shofar. Which, you know, has puzzled the commentaries for a long time. We know how important shofar is. Shofar, it's our ticket to life. That's how important the shofar is. And why? On Rosh Hashanah, if it's on Shabbos, we don't blow it. Because it could be a person might make a mistake and carry the shofar in a place where there's no Erev. Now, let's think about it. What's the likelihood of that happening? Most shofars are needed in synagogues, and there's lots of people around. People will be watching. We know there's a lot of people around. That's a deterrent for people to make such a mistake. So it could be, you know, somewhere in Godrich maybe, where there's this, you know, one or two people, and he's got his shofar, and he's going to go to the neighbor's house on Rosh Hashanah Shabbos to blow for him. Maybe he'll do that. But for that concern, all the Jewish people on the planet don't blow the shofar? So what does that mean? So it can only mean one thing. You got to realize that if one Jew, by mistake, carries on Shabbos, that's worse. That's worse, and it's negative, than the whole people blowing the shofar in terms of the positive.
Wow. Wow. Just for this.
That's how bad transgressing the Shabbos unintentionally is. Because otherwise, why should everybody not hear the shofar? That's what it is. What are you saying? Millions of people will not hear the shofar this year, because maybe, not for sure, maybe one person would unintentionally transgress. That can only tell you how terrible an avera is. How terrible an avera is. Like we said in one of the earlier classes, right? What if the president unintentionally presses the red button that blows up Moscow? You know, I forgot on Tuesdays the red button blows up Moscow, and Wednesdays it gets me food from KFC, you know. Right? I forgot. So shkoyach, you forgot, but you know what happened now? We have World War III because you forgot that. So better, you know, keep the guy away from the red thing, the red button. But that's how terrible an avera is. So you can imagine, you know, you think your tshuva has to be awfully good, and guess what? For certain averas, tshuva just ain't going to help. And alone, it's good starter, but you have to have a lot of suffering. So that's something you got to be worried about. You have da'aga. I'm worried that I'm going to suffer, but not just I'm going to suffer, but what could happen in the wake of all that suffering? It will break me. You know, a person has to have a good threshold of pain. So you did tshuva, you know, you can give many, many examples of this, right? You know, let's say, I don't want to give examples. People think I'm talking about them. So I'm trying to think of an example that I didn't know that nobody would think at all. This I think won't be anybody in this room. I'm pretty sure. Let's say a guy was really cheated in business. Really cheated, like really was bad, right? So he's doing tshuva, right? Okay, let's say that fellow, Mr. M, okay? Yeah, so he really feels bad and really is going to do a tshuva. Really is going to do a tshuva, right? So he does a tshuva, okay? So now he's done a complete, Hashem testifies he did a complete tshuva, right? Now he goes back into business, and now what probably Hashem will do is going to make him lose all his money. Even after he's paid everybody back. He's going to lose it, and he'll be mamish alo yutzlach in business. Now, that's going to be terrible. That's going to be crushing for the guy. That's going to hurt. It's going to really hurt. Now, but that's part of the process of, as we learned, the poison that you brought into the world. Everywhere you're putting poison into the world, the way the poison gets extracted, as we explained many times before, the idea of himtik mar bamar, where Hashem sweetens by having the bitter grind against the bitter. Right? You did an avera, you caused a bitter reality, you became a bitter individual, as it were. And now the only way that gets repaired is just like when the Jews were in the desert, they came to the bitter water. Hashem told Moshe to throw the bitter stick into the bitter water, and it made it sweet. So what happens? So all the negative energy you created has to come back on you and, so to speak, grind itself away on you till the result is bitter. It's sweet. And that's the only way it's going to get fixed, because that's the way the system works. That's the way the system works. So, but what are you concerned about? So I don't think it's just, you know, it's going to hurt me. Right? I think the concern is, though, if a person gets beaten too hard, if he may not be strong enough to take it, and then he can lose it. And that's what we ask from Hashem when we, on Yom Kippur, when we talk about the ideas after the Al-Chetz, and we say, Uma shechatasi lefanecha, and that which I sinned before you, moreik berachamecha harabim, cleanse it with your infinite mercy, with your great mercy, but not with bad sufferings. In other words, morek, you cleanse them with mercy, but not with bad sufferings. You know, so, you know, that's the concern. What's the bad sufferings? You could have such bad sufferings that I can't take it anymore. And I can't get up for davening, I can't go to shul, and you just, you know, you start becoming suicidal or depressed or other things like that. And there's a real, you're going to know that, you know what, there's a lot worse yet to come. Right? So don't make a mistake and think that it isn't a tshuva. A lot of people think, oh, Hashem hates me. He must hate me. My tshuva must have been lousy. Now, could be also, if you did a lousy tshuva, God will let you have it also. That could very well be. And we haven't even begun to get to the cleansing. But if you've done a really good tshuva, you should look forward to suffering. Because that is going to be the way to finish off the job. And that will weed out those last remnants that are there. And as I'll explain further on, so to the degree you're doing a better tshuva, maybe you won't need as much suffering. But for certain of us, it just has to be there. Yeah?
Yeah, well, I just making the connection with what you say about the shofar this year for Shoshone. And I talked with my cousin the other day in Lakewood, right? And he told me that we were talking about different arts thing. And he said that the address of the Lubavitch Rebbe in New York was 770, and this year is 5,770. So I wonder if what you say has a connection with what he said.
I don't know.
You know, he told me over the phone, you know, so I'm just making a connection.
Listen, you know it's a hard thing to know. It's a hard thing to know because, you know, the Hebrew letters don't bode well. you know, it depends how you play the letters. 770, it would be, tough? What would it be? Tough shin, resh, what were we last year?
Last year, tough shin, samach.
Samach tes, so tough shin ayin. Tough shin ayin. Okay, maybe it should be chua. Teshua, maybe. Whatever. It should be good for us. Okay, yeah.
Just to clarify, because I think the rabbi may have answered this just at the very end. But if it's an avera that requires suffering, then what value does the teshuva alone do? I mean, if you need the suffering anyway, then...
What value does the teshuva have if you need suffering?
Yes. For that particular avera, if the...
Because if you don't do the teshuva, then there won't be any kapara.
Will Hashem bring the suffering?
Hashem will bring you the suffering, and the suffering may not even be a kapara.
Well, so unless you take
it might
the first
be just to wake
to
you up.
So unless you take the first step to do the tshuva, then the suffering can't...
Suffering only helps. The rule of suffering as a kapara is only if you welcome it and you love it. Okay? You have to take it with love. If you fight it, then, now, obviously, if the person hasn't done tshuva, I don't think he's going to welcome it.
But is this worrying step negating the loving of the suffering?
No, it's being aware of what's happening, and you're very concerned that the suffering may push you over the edge. You may not survive the process. You know, lahavdil. Let's say a person, Nebuch, has a very terrible disease, right? So what's the first thing you have to do? You have to remove the disease, right? But then there's radiation, chemotherapy, right? Why? Well, the first thing is you have to remove the disease. If you don't remove the disease, it's going to get worse, right? So now you remove the disease. But what are they afraid of? Maybe a little bit has spread out. A little bit has spread out, and that means the disease is really still there, and it's just a matter of time till it rages back. So now what do you do? You have the chemotherapy, so it won't rage back. So now, there's a lot of suffering in chemotherapy, isn't there? Right? So let's use that analogy. So the operation to take it out, that's like the tshuva. I did real tshuva. I'm not gonna do it again. I've removed it from my life. But, God forbid, it's already gone into the lymph nodes, or whatever, or could go into the lymph nodes, right? So now we need that chemotherapy, and that's the suffering. That'll clean it out. But if you haven't done the first surgery, why would they give you radiation? Why would they give you radiation? It's not, you haven't gotten rid of the... So let's say it cleanses. But you're pumping more in as we speak. So it doesn't make any sense. Now, so God could make you suffer, because there's many reasons why he makes you suffer. And one reason he can make you suffer is to wake you up. Maybe it's time for the operation. But so that suffering didn't really cleanse anything. So that's so it could be all kinds of reasons, but clearly within the realm of tshuva there is the concept there will be suffering afterwards. No, for certain averos, there's clearly suffering for that afterwards. Yeah.
So is Rav Yehuda saying that this daga is only that I'm not going to be able to withstand the pain?
I'm taking the liberty to go further. I mean, just to say you're afraid you're going to suffer.
No.
That's coming up. That's another one. He has three, and that's another one of the three. That's going to be, I think, number two. Yes, that's number two. So I'm trying to differentiate between one and two, because I know what's coming up, right? Number two is coming up. So, like, why are you worried you're going to suffer? Why worry if you're going to suffer? I mean, if it's a good thing, it's a good thing. Are we just talking about, like, a hypochondriac? You know, so it's going to hurt. I think it can devastate your life. It could cripple you, right? So this is all like kind of scary stuff over here. But even on our level, we can't temper it too much. You know, on our level, even after a person returns, a person has to realize, you want to be a better person, but there are still remnants of, you know, why I wanted to do this and all that, that still remains. And when things are left over, it takes years and years until they become totally defunct and not part of your life. And that's the Da'aga Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about. It's wrong for a person to say, you know, I did something wrong and I can never get out of it. That's also wrong. But it's equally wrong for a person to assume that when he rises up out of it, it's like it doesn't exist at all. I did tshuva and it's out. It ain't out, baby. It ain't out. You know, if you didn't certain averas, maybe a small one, but a bigger averity, it ain't out. It's part of you. Got to remember, like I'm saying, the tshuva, okay, you've stopped doing, but the effect is still there. You can't deny the effect. You have a polluted brain. You know, whenever you look at certain things, boom, you think things or whatever, even though you stopped doing it. But, you know, ideas and images and all these things come to mind. So you have to have a certain amount of worry and concern that that there are remnants. And the remnants show up, as Rabbeinu Yonah speaks, that there are certain things that God, you know, even though he's forgiving you in his compassion, but he's got to make you live through certain things to purify and detoxify you of those circumstances. And that's what Hashem could be doing. And it doesn't have to be pain, physical pain that you get. It could be, you know, situations that are painful and, you know, other things. It doesn't have to literally be a sickness of pain. So it's important for the Baal Tshuva to know, you know, that he isn't a four-star general once he's done Tshuva, you know, and everything from A to Z is going to go right. You know, quite to the contrary. Again, you know, there are certain things that will go bad, so to speak, or seemingly bad, even after the person's done Tshuva. And again, that's very confusing for the Baal Tshuva. He's thinking that maybe I didn't do a good Tshuva, but he's saying that's part of what it is. Now, on a happier note, so you're all like very worried. So I better tell you one thing to make it a little better before we leave. We've got exactly 2 minutes. Later on in the book, Rabbeinu Yonah says it's very conceivable that if you intensify a certain part of your Avodas Hashem, then that intensity of that Avodas Hashem can take the place of the painful detoxification that has to happen with suffering. And he lists, when he talks about things that need Yesurim and things that need death even, and he says what things that can help. And he says he talks about giving tzedakah, all kinds of things can help. But the one that helps the most is learning Torah. And he says, why? He says, for two reasons. Number one, Talmud Torah k'neged kulam. Learning Torah is equal to everything, number one. But then he says, I'll just read you one, it's in the fourth gate, he says, ki yashis amalova Torah v'tarchaba, when he exerts himself in the Torah, v'asher tidar shnaso mayanov, and he loses sleep, he stays up late learning Torah, yalabim kom yisurim, it will take the place of suffering. Which you suffer in the learning of Torah. And this again, you know, and the suffering learning Torah is usually in the oral law, in the Gemara. Those of you who have been learning Gemara now, you've suffered, right? You're suffering trying to understand the Gemara. It's so hard to understand Gemara and to labor in that and to, I don't understand Pshat the Gemara, and it's bothering you and it's hurting you. Or even more, I would take liberty to say, you may be suffering in keeping the mitzvahs of the Torah. You know, there's a concept, you know, a person, God forbid, there's one level where you have to die for the ultimate kapara. But we said, what about if a person has to be moiser nefesh? If a person has to extend himself? Certain things we do in tshuva, we'd rather die than do tshuva, wouldn't you? I'd rather die than go over to that person and say, I'm sorry. I'd rather die than not be able to watch a football game. You know? Especially if it's my favorite team. Right? But you know what? And to not watch it and to die. You know, the way you think dying means. That's a lot of suffering. So what Rabbeinu Yonah will tell us later in the Sefer, we'll end with this, is that you should be concerned, and you should expect a healthy dose of suffering to come, to finish the job. But if you're clever, you'll avoid that. By what? By doing the mitzvahs that are hard to do. Oh, just one more analogy, the simple analogy. I'll say with myself, I was out of shape for many years, so I got backaches. Bad backaches. I did tshuva. Oh, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't do this. Doesn't matter. You're going to suffer. Now you have to take therapy. Now, how can you avoid that in the future? You go to the club and work out. You work out, which is also suffering. I don't like to work out. I hate it. It hurts. You feel the burn. But guess what? Haven't had a backache, Baruch Hashem, in 7 years. Right? So what, but why is that so? Because I didn't just sit back and say, okay, because the back will just come back and suffering will come because I was out of shape. Out of shape was the Avera. The Asurim is the backaches. So now if you work out, I am proactively bringing suffering that I'm guiding, so therefore I won't get other pain. So you don't have it. So that's the same thing. So go learn Torah. Suffer in these ways. That cleanses the same way. So what do you need God to hit you? Hit yourself. And on top of that, you maybe know some Torah. So that's the first area of concern. Tomorrow we'll continue with the second and third aspects of concern. Okay, shkayah. And now, okay. And now we... I hope so. This guy's outside. Get